No, I'm not for sale.
Welcome back to the Stampede Blue Colts Cast, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Matt Dainley. Thank you guys for joining me here again today. We've got a great guest on the line with us. We got the newest addition to Stampede Blue, Chris Blystone. What's going on, man?
Not a whole lot. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Glad to be able to talk a little bit of team here, talk shop for a little bit, and get you on here. I wanted to thank all you listeners for getting out and sharing the podcast and stuff. It's really doing well. I appreciate it. Thank you guys for all the ratings and reviews on iTunes. Those are helping tremendously. Please keep that up. Just wanted to put that out there at the beginning of the show. Also, if you guys want to get your questions in for the Stampede Mailbag, make sure you guys are hitting me up at stampedemailbag@gmail.com, and those articles will be coming out on Saturday morning. So thank you guys for that. Let's get started, Chris, man. We've got some news to talk about, of course. The Colts, you know, announced yesterday, Chris Ballard, that Andrew has been throwing, but he's going to start preseason on PUP. Also, Malik Hooker now is on the PUP list after what they described as a hamstring tweak. And, you know, there's a couple others that are going to be doing it on there. Obviously, Clayton Gethers is going to start the actual regular season on PUP. What do you make of all this, man? I mean, does any of this mean anything to you at all, or is this just kind of, you know, the fruits of the trail here at the beginning of the season?
Well, I mean, I think the Andrew Luck news was probably pretty expected. It's good to hear that it seems like things really are progressing like they said they were. Mm-hmm. We know they've been a little cryptic with some of the Andrew Luck health stuff in the past, but Pagano, Eric Holt haven't always told us the truth on that all the time, and that makes us a little nervous any time that we hear everything's fine with a $140 million arm. But I think pretty much what we heard was what we expected to hear. You know, he's going to be taking it slow, I wouldn't expect to see him. If you see him in any preseason games, it'd probably be very little, and expect probably regular season to be the first to see him. But
right.
The big thing, you know, that could be a problem is, is the Gethers thing. And that's not really a surprise either, but you really wanted to see him come back from that, you know, maybe a little sooner, because he has been probably one of the best and most consistent defenders on, you know, on that defensive side. That, you know, maybe that didn't say a whole lot, but...
No, but it's true.
Yeah, I mean, his tackling has been second maybe only to Devontae Davis's, and maybe not even to him. Just the kind of guy that you really didn't see much of in the Grigson era, especially not the homegrown type. So
right.
It really, really stinks to see him coming back slow, but it is a neck injury, and you've got to take that time and make sure that he comes back healthy, because you're not messing around with the neck. So
right. That's a major deal. I mean, it has the potential to be career ending. I mean, and, you know, we still don't know if he's even going to come back after week six. So, I mean, it's a really scary situation, because you've got, you know, as you mentioned, such a good defender, a good tackler. He's quality in coverage. I mean, the dude is really a guy that the Colts can depend on back there, which even when he was drafted, I wasn't so sure he was going to turn out that way. I was very happy how he, you know, began his career, and now it seems like we're getting back into a Bob Sanders-ish type of guy that is going to get injured and get injured in the wrong way. You know, tweaks and sprains and strains and dislocations and stuff like that, sometimes those linger, but neck issues, like you mentioned, man, neck issues are a bad deal, especially at a position of such high impact as safety, dime linebacker. I mean, that's just not good for the Colts.
Absolutely. Well, and the Colts don't have a whole lot, at least that we know yet. I mean, we've got this new lip defense to take a look at here in training camp and preseason to see if that's changed, but they haven't had an enforcer on the defensive side in a while. It may be Bob Sanders was really the last really truly nasty enforcer in the backfield. And, you know, Vontae can do that.
Wait, Leron Landry? Leron Landry was an enforcer to you?
I mean, he's probably an enforcer at some club somewhere. you know, those he's got that bouncer body going on. I don't know if there was a whole lot of enforcing going on any other time. Maybe he, you know, keeping guys like me out of his local gym because you know, we don't quite fit in. But you know, but when you look at somebody like Gethers and how, you know, just the impact that he could have on the game, you don't have a lot of guys like that, and you don't have a lot of guys like that in the safety group. And so replacing him is not easy because there really isn't anybody who fits that role well.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think it's going to be a struggle to find who that guy's going to be, and maybe they don't find him at all. Maybe they have to change things up and try to cover for the lack of that.
Right. So, I mean, we've got Butler back there now. Obviously, Hooker now, after the very first day of just conditioning and stuff, tweaks his hammy. So now he's gone. So now we got Butler and Matthias Farley, and we've got TJ Green. I mean, so... It looked like it was going to get interesting. Like we still have, you know, Malik Hooker back there and Darius Butler. We're going to have two guys that can ball hawk. That's interesting. Two free safety type guys back there. But now we don't even have that. Now we've got Matthias Farley, who is by nature a strong, you know, he's a more natural strong safety. And then we've got TJ Green, who is a guy that we've been talking about for months, even since last season, that guy could be on the roster, you know, bubble coming into this year's training camp. Now he looks like he's got a spot. I mean, he's going to ultimately have no choice, at least at the beginning of the season, I think, to fulfill that dime linebacker role. And he's got to do it good. That's the problem. But there's something that's going for TJ. He's got the ability to rush the passer off the edge. Because that's, I mean, I don't want to say off the edge, but that typically is where he comes from when he does rush the passer, when he's down in the box. And it's hard for me to explain in article form, but it's best, I guess, that I do it verbally here. When he comes down into the box late, like just half a second before the snap, that's when he's really good. When he starts in the box, that's not so good. I mean, he does not do well that way because he is a target that's known once he's down in the box. When he comes down in the box moments before the snap, he's a moving piece that isn't seen by the offensive lineman quite yet. He's another guy for everybody to pick up when they're trying to get to the second level in the running game for that offensive line. So he's definitely got a specified role that he can play in. His issue is he can't cover anybody. And now we've got Darius Butler, who by all accounts, I mean, I know that he's gaining weight, but he's fragile, I guess. I would put him that way. And he also likes to put the licks on people, too. So, I mean, you've got a guy who likes to put it on him, but he's also a little fragile and can be out. So, I mean, we have the potential for another safety being gone if he becomes the physical enforcer type guy back there that, you know, we really don't have at this point, at least not active. And Farley's a good quality player, but he's not a starter, really. I mean, he's not an NFL starter. He's a starter on this team out of necessity. But, I mean, this really shakes things up a lot back in that secondary. We thought that this year's secondary was going to grow a lot because of who we had coming in, Gethers coming back, so on and so forth. TJ Green may or may not make the team. But now we're basically in the same spot that we were last year, and it's not even with Mike Adams. It's with Darius Butler.
Well, and, you know, the one good thing about Darius Butler is, you know, he is a veteran. He's one of the oldest guys on the defensive side of the ball, and that is a big deal in this young defensive backfield because these guys, they're going to need somebody to kind of hold it together. Even if he's not the best guy on the field, that veteran presence in the backfield, calm guys down, keep guys' heads in the game. That's going to be really significant to somebody, you know, like TJ Green, who, you know, if he gets shaken up, if he, you know, misses on, you know, lets them get past him, which he did a lot. You know, I don't know if he's the kind of guy who lets that get inside his head, but Darius Butler's the guy who doesn't let that get inside his head. We watched that happen in his first start, you know, against Green Bay. He misses a gimme interception, and then he comes back and gets a pick later in the game. And he can just shut down. And, you know, having that short-term memory, he's been around long enough to know that's important. And, you know, somebody like TJ Green, you know, or Matthias Farley, who, you know, he's shown some promise, but he's still relatively, you know, new, getting his feet wet and everything. Or maybe even one of these other guys who's kind of waiting in the wings, hoping to make a name for themselves. You know, if they get in there, they're going to need that veteran leadership. Even if he's not the best guy in the backfield, he's going to be a big part of that backfield.
Yeah.
The other thing is you don't necessarily know what tweaking a hamstring really looks like with Hooker, so that's going to be something to really watch because, hamstrings, man, they're the kind of thing that you just have no clue what that could mean. It could mean that by middle of the week next week, he's totally fine and he's back at it. Or it could mean that he's going to have that hamstring lingering and nagging him all season long, and we won't see what Malik Hooker really could have looked like because he's going to be a step slower than he would have been all season. It's really hard to quantify that, and
right.
It seems like it happens a lot when these guys have sat because of an injury. I think they don't know how to go to take it slow, especially some of these hot rod, you know, rookie corners are coming, rookie defensive backs. These guys are coming in, and they got to look, you know, they got to look the part, and they got to be the man. And I don't think they, you know, necessarily ease themselves into it sometimes, and end up tweaking something or you know, something like that. These are egotistical guys. They got to be ego driven in order to make it in that position. And I think maybe that gets to them a little bit in some of those things. So.
Yeah, and you look at the other side of that there, and the Hooker. Let's say he does come back. Let's say he was completely healthy coming back after, you know, training camp. He still is going to have a learning curve. He hasn't been on the field at all yet. He wasn't there for the off-season program. He wasn't there for anything as far as on the field doing anything. Mental reps and digging your nose in the playbook can only get you so far when you're not on the field doing the same thing. I mean, you got to put playbook to the field. And if you're only putting playbook to playbook and then kind of watching others do it for you, I mean, I guess you can learn a little bit from that, but you're not where you need to be at that point. That's a major, I think that's a serious setback for Hooker. I mean, I think that he really has to be on that field before he's going to start learning. And this is the NFL. It's not Ohio State. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying Ohio State necessarily. I mean, it's not the college football. He's got to be on the field to actually get himself in line and to start learning and to start reacting, because everybody's faster, man. He's going to be a step or two slow regardless of how – if he comes back 100% healthy.
Well, and he was new to the position to begin with, so he doesn't have a lot of experience to, mm-hmm. to draw from. The things he has going for him is he has good instincts, and you know, he's a ball hawk. And those instincts need to be paired with knowledge and understanding of the scheme and your fit inside of it. And if it's not there, he's going to struggle. And it's going to happen no matter what, because you know we know what our defense looks like. Best case scenario, if we see a significant improvement on this defense, he is still going to struggle because he's going to be asked to pick up the slack for, I mean, the cornerbacks, who are not a great unit either. And you're going to be expecting a lot from somebody like Quincy Wilson, who's probably going to be starting across from, you know, from Vontae Davis. You're going to be picking up a lot of slack there at the safety position, and the expectations are high because you're being compared by your coach to Ed Reed. And you know, every pundit out there says this is a steal for the Colts, and we hope that it is. But that's a lot of pressure in a position that is really tough. And sometimes we're pretty quick in the era of Twitter to crucify these guys in a year when they're not exactly what we hoped they would be.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we forget that they don't get to practice the same amount that they used to. Bruce Arians, in an interview on Pat McAfee's podcast a couple weeks ago,
yeah,
talking
heard
about that. About offensive linemen specifically,
mm-hmm.
was his, you know, his thing. But talking about how much less there is to practice and how hard it is to make that switch, and that you may be you know, having 8 snaps doing something that you've never done before you suit up against somebody who's a professional football player. And that's insane to me.
It definitely makes a difference. I mean, everything that they do get that instant criticism if they don't live up to the hype. I mean, immediately. But there's a couple things that you can see, okay? And I'll start with TJ Green, kind of why he's gotten it. And maybe we'll even roll with Philip Dorsett as well. Philip Dorsett isn't being criticized because he's not an all-pro player. Philip Dorsett's being criticized because he was a first-round pick and he's not living up to that first-round pick. The same will be it'll be the same for Malik Hooker. If he's a good safety, not a great safety, he'll be, you know, forever discounted because he's not lived up to that top 15 pick. TJ Green, on the other hand, a second-round pick, he's just simply not got it yet. And Malik Hooker can't be that guy. Because if he is, I mean, can you imagine if TJ Green was the Colts' first-round pick? I mean, I don't even want to – I mean, there'd be fires everywhere in Indianapolis. You know what I'm saying? Everybody
he and
Philip
Dorsett would have a support group.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it'd be going crazy right now because that's just the way it happens. TJ Green's not living
in at Trent Richardson's house. And
right. You know, I think that some people were legit. Now, I was on the hype train for Trent Richardson, no doubt. But I think that people were legitimately disappointed when they actually didn't see a bowling ball with butcher knives attached to it roll out onto the field. People take some of this stuff.
I think there would have been at least one penalty, but it would have been worth seeing.
People take this stuff so seriously when we hear all these different metaphorical phrases, and they expect that. And that's the problem when people start comparing Hooker to Reed. People can't take everything so stinking literally. What they're telling you is
absolutely. If you go to training camp, do not expect them to be working out by chopping wood. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
don't show up to training camp expecting to take home firewood.
Nope.
Was chopped by Andrew Luck personally. Not going to happen.
Nope. No shorts and overall suspenders with axes in hand. That's not happening. But the thing is,
maybe when Pat McAfee was there, it might have. But.
Yeah, right. Well, that's quite possible too. The thing with Hooker, though, is that he really has the ability to be a good safety. He's a good guy that he can cover a lot of space. He's not a huge hitter, but he wasn't drafted to be. I've talked about that several times. There's you have to put everything into the right box when you're talking about these guys and any comparisons that are made to them. If you really think you're getting Ed Reed out of Malik Hooker, you're not. What you are getting is a similar type player as far as how he plays the game. He's a ball hawk. I mean, basically, if there was no Malik Hooker right now, they'd be saying that Butler is similar to so-and-so. Whatever he reminds people of is who they're going to compare him to. I mean, it's not because they think that he's the next this or that. It's because he's a ball hawk or he's a hard hitter. I mean, everybody wanted to, just like me, even, in fact, earlier in the show, I compared Almost Gethers to Bob Sanders. It's because he is known to be not so much the enforcer, but he's the power at that safety position, and Bob Sanders was a bullet constantly. Definitely not the same player, but there's nobody else that I can compare him to that's been a safety for the Colts that would compare correctly, you know what I'm saying, or even in the same ballpark. But people can't assume that Clayton Gethers is Bob Sanders either. I mean, who are we going to compare to on here that was like Antoine Bethea? That might be better comparison for Hooker, to be quite honest with you. Still not as physical, but as far as his coverage skills, I think it's fairly similar.
Yeah, I actually like that comparison a lot. And if he turns out to be half the player that Antoine Bethea is, I think we can count ourselves pretty lucky.
Yeah.
Because that'd be great. But like you said, I mean, a lot of it's more putting a picture into somebody's head. We need to be able to explain and give an idea of what that comp is without having to spend 15 minutes breaking down all of what those traits mean and give you an idea what you're dealing with. Just this is a type of person. We're giving you a general skill set so that you kind of have an idea. You know, you can't take it at face value, and I think people do a little bit sometimes and then get disappointed if they're not going to the Pro Bowl every year from day one. Well, that doesn't happen with every player, so you just take it, you know, with a little bit of a grain of salt there on some of those things. So
right. Does it bother you that there are some other guys on the team that are also going to be on the PUP? And does it matter, like Brian Schwenke, who's an offensive lineman? Does that, you know, he's basically going to be running behind Ryan Kelly, and he's going to probably be interchangeable between the left and right guard. I mean, this is kind of a spot where we thought the offensive line was going to be deep this year. And it bothers me that he's not going to be there for 4 weeks, because we've got a guy who has gotten familiar with the team through the offseason program, but he's not going to be there for camp. And that to me is unsettling a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, the offensive line has made some pretty big strides over the last year, and they don't get a lot of credit for it. National media doesn't want to give them any credit for it, but man, the depth has always been the killer. And we start getting these injuries getting stacked up and guys having to rotate around because you got somebody who, you know, isn't able to fill in, and then you've got, you know, guard playing tackle, and you got the center playing guard, and you've got these guys just moving all over the place, and it just damages that ability to get any kind of cohesion. And I think we've seen with young offensive linemen that a little bit of continuity on the line makes a difference as the season goes, because they kind of learn each other's tendencies. Their trust with one another is a big deal, and man, I don't think it's ever good to have anything that's damaging to that depth there, because, you know, if you're not keeping as much continuity on the line as possible, you're looking at Andrew getting hit more, you're cutting into rush yards, and I don't think we've got any back that we can say is a guaranteed you know, 1,000-yard runner, no questions asked, if the offensive line is not good.
Right. I agree. Where do you think the Colts are strongest this year going into the season?
Man, I mean, the easy answer is at quarterback because, you know, Andrew Luck is fantastic. But it's got to be, I think, you know, I want to say my favorite position. I would say the wide receiver position is going to be the strongest this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't know that that's accurate. I've probably oversold them over the last 2 or 3 years. and I really had high hopes for Philip Dorsett. But let me tell you, I'm pretty excited about Chester Rogers and Kamar Aiken as well. I think both of those guys have an opportunity to make a big impact. I don't think Philip Dorsett is going to be on this team after this year. I think he's going to be gone. I don't see the flash there with him that he's going to make something of himself. Maybe he proves me wrong, and I really hope he does. There's not a lot of guys who can beat T.Y. Hilton, and he hasn't shown the ability to separate and do some of the things that I really think you need to be able to do if you're his size to stay around for very long. And then you've got guys like Kamar Aiken, who kind of got buried under targets last year for Baltimore, and you know, Dennis Pitta was a ball hog all last year. You know, then you had Mike Wallace had a really good season, and so I think Kamar Aiken probably is better than what his numbers showed last year, and he is about exactly the same size as Moncrief. So he could be a big physical presence downfield. Chester Rogers has looked good in both preseason and in the time or the you know, training camp and the time that he spent, you know, the snaps that he got last year. He made the most of it. He looked good. So I think, you know, the depth there is a little better than it's been in years past, and I really am looking for this to be the year that Moncrief kind of takes his big step. And I think he's been right on the borderline there. And last year, you know, the injury hampered him the year before. Andrew was out a whole bunch, and he still stepped up and looked really good. Year four, you know, not that this means anything, but year four was the year that Reggie Wayne took his big leap and, you know, became a real presence. So I really hope that's what happens for Moncrief. He is probably one of my favorite guys on this roster.
Mm-hmm.
I like everything he's about. And, you know, he needs to be used better in the middle of the field. He needs to be used better as a possession receiver. But I feel like there were a lot of times where he was Andrew's security blanket, like Reggie Wayne was when Andrew first came in. And if he can be that again, and if he can, you know, make the most of those possessions, because he's the guy who is going to, you know, put a helmet on somebody or break a tackle or make something after the catch where, you know, Dorsett and Hilton, they don't always do that. Hilton is kind of a one move and go sort of guy, and you know, he does a great job of what he does, but he's kind of like Marvin, where he just disappears when the hit's coming and you're thinking he's about to get destroyed. He's just not there anymore.
Yeah.
And goes down and takes the safe thing. And you know what? That's the best way, because I want to see T.Y. Hilton on the field all season long. But man, I have high hopes for Moncrief this year. I've you know, made some bold predictions about him that are probably going to be wrong, and I hope everybody, you know, mocks me relentlessly about them, because I'm not good at predictions, and you should never make them and publicly post them anywhere. It's a stupid idea. So,
that's part of the fun, though, man. But I agree with you. I think that
right.
Moncrief and Hilton do resemble somewhat of a Wayne and Harrison combination. Moncrief came in really young, too. Moncrief's still young. So, I mean, year four for him is similar to a year two or three for another guy. I mean, I think that Moncrief comes in, he offers a lot, and I think you hit it right on the head when you said they need to find a way for him to contribute more in between the 20s. I mean, that is not the spot where he's been successful. Early in his rookie year and a little bit in his second year, they did a lot of boundary throws with him. They would bring him underneath a little bit and try to get him some possession catches. But for the majority last year, I mean, every single one of his touchdowns were inside the 25-yard line or from inside the 25-yard line. And that is great, but you can't pigeonhole him into that role. That's not – you're wasting his talent if they do that. And I don't think that they necessarily are, but when you look at his totality of his game, he's very quick for his size. He's got a lot of length. He's got good hops. He's a very good hands catcher as well. He's not much of a body catcher that I've noticed throughout the early portions of his career. But I want to see him really be able to do something after the catch as well, and I think that's something that he legitimately needs to improve on. There's not much the coaching staff can do with that. He's got to be able to find that hole, understand where he's at, where the defenders are at, and then understand where to go after the catch. That's something that I want to see him improve on greatly. While Hilton is going to be Hilton, as far as I'm concerned, for the most part, Aiken also, it will take some of that pressure off of Moncrief to be that tight end, or that to be that red zone threat from the wide receiver position. I think Rodgers also adds some quality route running. I really think Dorsett's the guy on the outside looking in here as far as getting a ton of targets this year if he's still on the team. But the one thing that does have me concerned is, as much as I like Jack Doyle, the rest of, I mean, Williams and Swoop, Swoop is a guy that I think has a lot of potential. I'm just worried that he's not there yet. And if he's not there yet, Williams has caught like five balls in his entire career. What are they going to do there? They've really got to make sure that this tight end group is, I mean, I don't know. They have to get this group in order, though. I mean, you can't rely just on solely on Jack Doyle throughout the season for your tight end production. He's great.
You've got to think.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to think he's going to come back down to earth, because, I mean, the whole Doyle rules and everything was fantastic, and I loved it, and I like Jack Doyle, and I like everything about all that. But I don't think that's representative necessarily of what we should expect from him. If he does it again this year, awesome, we change the bar and say Jack Doyle is this kind of guy, and this is what we can expect from him. But, you know, until he does it again, and now, you know, he's got a target on his back now. He's Jack Doyle. He's not just some, you know, some schlub on the Colts that nobody's heard of, you know, that's going up and getting touchdowns. He's Jack Doyle. He's a starting tight end. And so he's going to be marked, and it's going to be interesting to see how he's played, see if he's able to do the same kinds of things and have the same kinds of production. But, yeah, like you said, if you've got some of those other guys who can take the pressure off in the red zone, and we know that's not T.Y.'s area, you know, he's never been a big red zone threat. He doesn't have the size to really make that work. You need those guys who can get in there and go up for contested balls. And I really hope to see, you know, a couple of these guys make that their thing. Yeah, I think that just closes the window. I think I really just think it closes the window on Dorsett, because I don't think he has a skill that lends itself to that particular thing, which is, I think, the biggest need that the Colts are going to face this year.
Yeah, I think that, and it, I think that it's even possible as we get into a lot of, now, I was speaking to Kevin Bowen maybe 2 weeks ago, and he was talking, like, I've always been a guy that thinks that the wide receivers for the Colts, or the Colts are always going to carry six receivers. I mean, that just is stuck in my head for some reason. They typically do. He seems to think that the Colts can get away with only carrying five with Chester Rogers as a return guy as well, kind of doubling in that role. I also think that Dorsett might be a guy that they try to work into there, because he does have electric speed. He's very, I mean, he's quick. He's got some nice change of direction and stuff like that. So it makes me wonder, because they, remember they tried that with T.Y. on punt return for a while early in his career, and it wasn't, you know, a bad thing. T.Y. did pretty well. It was just, God, you're going to get our best receiver murdered on punt return. And now, I mean, a guy like Dorsett, he's going to be scraping and clawing to keep himself in line for the 53-man roster. He better be on every, I mean, look, hey, if you guys want to come for special teams extra work, you know, catching the ball out of the jugs machine, come get it. He better be there, because the guy, he hasn't been on the field either. He better be the guy that goes in and be like, look, I don't care what I got to do. I don't care if I have to play safety. I want to play. You know what I'm saying? I mean, yeah, he really needs to be that guy.
Well, and they did, if you remember, they actually put him in on, I believe it was punt return, his first, you know, early on, some of the first stuff that he did, I think he muffed a couple of punts or at least a couple of kickoffs in one game, and that was sort of all she wrote for that, because I don't know if he just completely lost Pagano's confidence but, you know, but I had high hopes for that, because, of course, you see the speed and you just, I mean, you just kind of get foaming at the mouth a little bit as a Colts fan. You watched T.Y. Hilton be all of this that people said, you know, T.Y. Hilton is nothing more than a speedster, and he's not going to succeed in this role. You know, all he's ever going to be is a straight line receiver. And he was like, all right, I hear you, and watch me. And then he just destroyed the league ever since then. I mean, he's just been impossible to really shut down completely. I mean, you don't know when he's going to go off. In 2016, I think he even blew the doors off what he had done before. So you looked at that and you said, oh my gosh, if we could line up somebody like T.Y. Hilton across, I mean, you know, I'm with everybody. I didn't like the pick. But there was still that part of me that's going, oh, buddy, I want to see these guys on both sides of the field. And then the slow guy, quote unquote, slow guy is Moncrief. Really? That's what we're going to have? I mean, defensive backs are going to lose tons of sleep. Yeah. And it just didn't turn out that way. And just so frustrating because at least if it would have been a bad pick because of the player position that you chose, if the player is still awesome, I really do believe that best player available, if you're getting a quality player, in the long run, it kind of evens out. But when you miss on a player that's picked for best player available, and you know, then you end up with a guy who doesn't fit what you need and isn't great at his position, then you just really screw yourself. So
yeah. If USA Today had the Colts at 5-11 for their record for the year. First, I mean, does that make any sense to you? Does it seem like that's possible to you, or does it seem like that's way underselling it?
No, that's way underselling it. And my first foray on Stampede Blue was, you know, my wonderful negative article that everybody loved so much. And so I gotta preface that I am a diehard homer, and I struggle against the fact that I want to make the Colts undefeated Super Bowl win every year. I mean, that's just, it's that internal, I don't want to ever vote against the Colts. I don't ever want to pick against them. But I got to be realistic, and there is no way that they're going to only win 5 games. I'm sorry, the division is getting much better, and I think that can't be discounted. I think that there's a really strong chance the Jaguars actually do, you know, win more than 3 games this year, like maybe 5. But, you know, I think they're improving. There's a lot of improvement there. The Titans, I think, you know, look like the team to beat in the division right now, and they're going to be a really, you know, a force to be reckoned with. The Texans defense, these are not, you know, nobody teams. The Texans, I think, maybe are going to fall off a little bit this season, but you're looking at the division that is on the rise, and so that can't be discredited, but you know, I still don't see any way you don't trade wins with them, and if you can't beat the Browns, and you can't beat the Niners, and you can't beat the Rams, I mean, come on, what are we doing with ourselves? If we can't beat, you know, teams like that and then maybe squeak out 2 or 3 more in close matchups, our offense, you know, with a guy with a torn labrum destroyed a ton of teams, but for the fact we couldn't stop anybody on defense. I mean, we would have, how many more games would we have won if we could have gotten a stop? Last season. So I don't see any way that's possible. That doesn't mean we're necessarily going to be a successful team, you know, in the postseason or anything like that. But if we're anything less than 8-8, I would really be shocked. I don't see it.
8-8 seems like maybe a safe bet as far as that goes, because it just, there are, you know, the Colts do play down to their competition quite a bit. So that's not like totally unlike them for them to blow a game. I mean, they got housed, I think it was in 2013 or maybe 2014, by the Rams at home. It'd been 2013, yeah. I mean, just completely housed. And the Rams were awful that year. And the Colts still won 11 games somehow. We're not sure exactly how they did that. But this is not something new for the Colts to play down to their competition. The Colts continually play crappy against the Jacksonville Jaguars. They've blown them out a couple times, but it seems almost always that the Colts and the Jaguars have a one-score game. The Colts got housed by them. I mean, the Jags put, what, a 60-burger on them 2 years ago? I mean, it was ugly, like real ugly.
Yeah.
And, I mean, just stuff like that. So I understand where people come off as far as assuming maybe that they could win as few as 6 games, 5 games, maybe. But, I mean, if you're looking at their schedule, you understand that Andrew Luck's coming back. You have to notice and have to give credence to the defensive additions that the Colts have got. They're better against the run already. I mean, you say it's on paper, but already the Colts are better against the run. They've already got, I mean, well, before what, yesterday, they already had a better secondary than they've had in the past few years as well. I mean, I don't think that it's too far of a mistake to say that Quincy Wilson is already better than Greg Toler and Patrick Robinson. I mean, I don't see that's not something that is just completely outlandish to say. However, you also have Rashawn Melvin there, who I can tell you right now is better than Greg Toler and Patrick Robinson without any question.
Absolutely.
So it doesn't matter if Quincy Wilson is better than them. You have at minimum two corners that are better than anything that they've had last year, and that is nice. I mean, these are absolute guaranteed. I mean, that's a little strong, but there's a very strong probability that every aspect of the Colts defense this year is significantly better than it was last year. And I think that, before Hooker was out.
Let's say that they're only equal. Let's say that across the board, none of the positions on the defense actually improve in ability. They're still better because they're younger and they're faster. So they're less likely to be injured, and that means you get to keep your starter in the game all season long with a higher likelihood. So even if they aren't better, they're better.
Right.
And we don't think that they aren't better. We think that they definitely have improved in a lot of areas. But even just by nature of the fact that they've got guys who are younger and faster, and it's not that the guys that we lost were older, slower, and also really good. They were guys, with the exception of Robert Mathis, who, you know, really Robert too. It was time to go. And this is not a league that can be sentimental. Teams can't be sentimental. They have to be practical if you want to win.
Mm-hmm.
You move on from those guys, and I'm glad Robert was able to go out kind of on his own way. But you've got these new young guys in there. You've got somebody who I think is being undercredited with what he could do, and he was one of my favorite players 2 years ago. Henry Anderson, I think, could be in for a really big year. I really like Henry Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you always hear that it takes almost 2 years to come back fully from an ACL tear. And if he can keep healthy, man, I think he could be really something. And, you know, so you've got some of these guys on the defense that are new, that are better, and you've got some of your guys getting healthy that are better. I don't see any way that you can't say our defense could have won, you know, three more games than the Colts are in the playoffs last year, and you know, easily so, because we didn't lose, I mean, you know, against the Lions.
Right.
You know, that game, blew that game at the end of the game. And, you know, off the top of my head, I'm not immediately thinking of others, but I know there were.
Well, the seven-minute debacle there with Houston when the Colts were up.
Yeah, or any time we've played Houston in the last 2 years where it just seems like we fall apart and just hands the game to them.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't say that's going to happen if the defense is able to make the jump from, you know, whatever, 26th to 21st. That's a playoff berth right there. That difference, even if that's all it is a playoff berth with the offense that we had.
Right. Well, I mean, think about the other part of that, too. And I'll name another one. You know, before the strip sack of Andrew Luck in Denver, the Colts were, 6 points down inside of a couple minutes to go. I mean, the Colts have had opportunity. They could. Okay, so let's say that they realistically win those three games last year. That does put them in the playoffs. Even just two of them puts them in the playoffs. But George Brimmer brought up an interesting thought that really kind of, you know, really worked on my brain. And he said, look, if they win those games, the Colts may not change over in the front office. They may not have had this influx of quality young free agents. And virtually nothing could look the same as it does right now. And though we're going through a rebuild, this is an exciting rebuild because we have the new GM. He's definitely got a plan. I didn't feel like the Colts had ever had a plan in the past. It just seemed like, we're going to go with this. You know, it just seemed like something was
always. The
plan was
make Pagano miserable.
Yes, and not only that, but I don't think that, and some people might like this, but if Grigson was retained, maybe Pagano's not here this year. So, I mean, there's some things you can see that Ballard and Pagano work well together. And I'm not saying that that's going to necessarily lead to a fantastic record. But what that does mean is that there's a camaraderie in the office. You saw Zach Kiefer's story where he talks about how Ballard brought a calming effect to the entire complex. People who we don't even know the names of that work for the Colts right now were significantly at ease because Ballard was, you know, brought in as opposed to Grigson being returned. I mean, there's a big.
I love picturing him strolling the halls in flip flops. That just when you can't imagine Grigson in flip flops, I just envision him stomping through the halls and just like being sweaty and just unpleasant. and Ballard just seems like he's just a cool dude, and he is a breath of fresh air. but he's not a pushover either. And right. that's not always a combination you get of a guy who's easygoing. He's the kind of guy, and I think Tony Dungy was a little bit this way, who can tell you, do your job, and I'm going to stay out of your way. But if you don't do your job, I'm going to come find you, and you're going to have to be held accountable for that.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, that style resonates with players because they're grown men. And they're good at what they do, and they don't mind being held accountable, but they don't need to be berated. They don't need to be, you know, made to feel like they're, you know, not valuable or anything. Nobody works harder than NFL players and NFL coaches, you know, to perfect their craft, and nobody cares more about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they don't need, for the most part, you know, a general manager to hound them and make them feel, you know, inferior or anything like that. But I wonder, and I want to know your thoughts on this. What do you think that Pagano has to do through this season? You know, you have a lot of opinions, and a lot of people want him gone at all costs. And I do think there's something on the line for him, but I'm curious to know what you think, if any, there's as far as expectations for him to stay the coach next season.
It's so crazy to think about, because there are so many possibilities to end the season. There's so, I mean, and I don't know how viable it is, but I think that there's some truth in it, and I'll go back to the conversation I had with George about this. We talked about that there was some piece and some sliver of possibility that the Colts could go 7-9 or 6-10, and Pagano could be retained. There could be the Colts could go 9-7, and he could get fired. You know, I think a lot. Personally, on my own end, I say that often because I don't really try to commit to an answer on that, but I'm gonna give you an answer. I really think that if the Colts don't start out above 500 in their first six games, I think that Pagano has one foot out the door already. I really believe that, because they just have the easiest part of their schedule is at the beginning. The back end of their schedule isn't exactly, you know, a bunch of world beaters, but they definitely have the possibility and the probability of starting the season out the right way, and they could get some momentum going throughout their season if they start out hot. And not, you know what I mean hot, 4-2, even 3-3. If the Colts can start out 3-3, I think Pagano is still in the building at that point. But over the course of the season, I mean, if we're going to go with the end result being the, you know, determining factor, I really think that he has to see a team that Pagano either coached as well or better than he expected to finish at the midway point in the season. So let's say the Colts are at that midway point. There's a lot of chemistry that has to take place for the Colts to jive right now. I mean, that's simplistic. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to understand that, and Chris Ballard will know that. So at the midway point, if he doesn't see the Colts get better, whether the record indicates that or not, then I think that Pagano's gone. So if you take that midway point in the season and Ballard is looking at the job that Pagano's done, from that point on through the end of the season, if Pagano didn't get those guys to play better than that, then I think he's probably gone. And I think that it would take a 10-win season and possibly a playoff win to keep him in the building at that point, if they don't get better than they did, than they were at mid through midway through the season. Because I think that there's just too much that goes into that. I think that there's too much of the chemistry that people are going to understand at the midway point in the season. Look, these guys are finally starting to gel. And we've seen that. We saw that last year. It took the offensive line 14 weeks to do it, but the offensive line finally started to gel. And this goes and proves my point. There's a couple here that I want to prove real quick to the listeners. The first of which is, with all these injuries the Colts have, this goes to show you that being physical in training camp has absolutely nothing to do with injuries. These guys are taking their very first sprints in conditioning, and he's already tweaked a hammy. I mean, this is going to happen. People are going to break ankles, twist ankles. They're going to dislocate fingers, and it's not going to have anything to do with with being physical. It's going to have everything to do with a football hitting them the wrong way, or tripping, or land. You know, just whatever. Somebody could fall on the ground and dislocate a shoulder. And the second part of that is that when you look at the difference or the correlation between chemistry and continuity is great if there's chemistry with that continuity. If you've got the same offensive line for 10 years, and they suck through 8 of those years. Continuity has done nothing for that offensive line. When you brought, when they brought in LaRaven Clark, and then Haig was the constant starter there at right guard. I mean, Harrison did okay at left guard, filling in occasionally, you know, but I mean, really the right side is what I'm talking about. That right side of the line really came together towards the end of the line. Now, they were letting some guys through a little bit. Luck wasn't getting sacked as much, but it was because one guy was getting through as opposed to three guys getting through. you know what I'm saying? That's why he wasn't getting the sacks. Definitely. It wasn't because there was no pressure, because there was, but there wasn't as many guys producing the pressure from the defensive ends. And I really think that when you see this group finally get that light switched on, that the chemistry is what's going to build this offensive line, and that's going to keep a lot of things in check for the Colts this year. And when you look at the fact that they've been really a cohesive group through the offseason, been out together, they've been, you know, studying together as far as the playbook and what they need to be doing. They've done a lot of drills and stuff together on their own on the offseason without coaching and all that other stuff. That tells you right there that not only do they all get along and they all kind of, you know, have the same goal, but that they can all be around each other and not hate each other, and that they all have the same goal in mind. You know what I mean? That's something that can't be understated, in my opinion. So, I mean, that was a really long-winded way to answer your question, but I think it all plays into it.
Sure. Well, and I agree. I think you're absolutely right. And one of the things that I think stuff like Hard Knocks and, you know, All or Nothing, all of the, you know, those types of looks, they remind you of the humanity of a football team. It's very easy for us as fans to forget that we're talking about a person who has a life outside of football, not much of one during football season, but, you know, things go on around them. Things are, you know, surrounding these people. And, you know, we remembered that when, you know, Pagano was struggling with cancer and that was, you know, right in our face. But, we forget that, like, oh, you're not just subbing in pieces here. And so when you get rid of a coaching staff, that's significant.
Right.
And so you want to make sure that it's a need. You want to make sure that it's important. And what I hope, because I think after this is the prove-it year in my mind for Pagano. I think he's got the young defensive talent that if he can't groom these guys, he can't do it. He's not ready for this job. He needs to go back to defensive coordinator somewhere, and he needs to move on. But he also has an opportunity to work with, you know, a general manager who has coaching experience, who has a different style of management, who's kind of a player's guy. I mean, the players seem to like him, the organization, they seem to like him. And he has a different way about him. And that's the way Pagano is as well. He's kind of a player's coach. You know, he's the guy who, you know, who wants to care about his players and everything like that. And I think all coaches do to some degree, but he's really well liked. But he maybe needs to learn how to do that better. Maybe he needs to learn how to hold guys accountable better. And he might be able to learn something and grow as a coach, you know, from Chris Ballard. And I hope that he does, because I'd like to see him stay, but he has to get better. He's got to have teams that are better prepared. They can't come out and be behind in every single game. Your game planning can't be that bad.
Right.
That you come out slow every single game. You can't blow big leads. And all of it is not talent. I know that some of it is talent, and all of it is not, like some people want to believe, bad play calling. You know, but there are a lot of things that go into it, and he's got to do his part of the job better. And he's able to do that. I mean, he was a new head coach, and, you know, he's only been working under Grigson, and he's got all these head coaches or former head coaches on his staff. And you want to think that he can grow as a coach and be better. And I think if he doesn't do it this year, you're going to see him gone, and that's probably a good thing. But I still hesitate to celebrate any time you're going to cycle out a whole staff, because you're talking about new playbook. You're talking about, you know, new coaching staff, getting to know all these people. You know, they want to maybe bring in their own types of guys. It's just, it's a lot of havoc. And if you can avoid it by growing your coach and bettering them as well, then you're better off to do that. Because there's not, you know, there's not a Vince Lombardi out there somewhere waiting to just step in that we know of anyway.
Right.
It's just going to be, you know, a master artist and just, you know, a game changer that, you know, every time somebody says, let's get rid of the coach, well, who are you going to hire? Because you do have to replace him with somebody. And, you know, it doesn't seem like John Gruden is interested.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what? And I hope he's not interested, because I'm not interested in him either.
Me too.
That was the biggest joke of an offseason as far as I was controlled, with people saying, or as far as I'm concerned, that people were wanting him in there. And I mean, a career 500 coach, I mean, you've already got a guy that's better than that right now. And yeah. That's another story for another podcast, but we absolutely. You know, Chris, we get to this point and we are so close to training camp, man. Let's finish out the show. What's your favorite, what is a favorite camp battle that you're really looking forward to checking out in the coming weeks?
You know, I am really chomping at the bit to see Marlon Mack, and see what he looks like when in pads, getting hit. The buzz is all there. I really liked Robert Turbin. I thought he was underutilized, and this is by no means disrespectful to Frank Gore, but his time is coming to a close, and the Colts, I don't think, would be wise to ride him hard this season. I think he needs to limit his touches to be able to be effective and get some of these younger guys a shot. I'm really interested to know whether Turbin or Mack is going to really just, you know, put their stamp on things, or if it's just going to end up being more, you know, running by committee, which I think would be fine too. But, you know, there's a lot of hype around Mack. I would love it if that hype was justified and then he just came out and dominated. Mm-hmm. But that's what I'm looking to see, is one of those two guys really step up. And I mean, hey, as far as, you know, Chris Ballard has said, competition is king. So, you know, maybe go for Gore's job, you know, try to unseat the veteran. And I don't think it's going to happen, but, you know, I want to see one of those guys really, you know, take it to training camp and come out looking like a stud that you could get behind on the running back.
I agree. I definitely want to see some people turning their eyes and raising their eyebrows when they see Mack come out. And you know, Turbin, we know he's going to bring, but I think Turbin's still got some excitement to him as well. I'd like to see Gore come out strong. I mean, ultimately, I want to see the running back position in good shape. But I really want to see, like you said, some flashes at minimum from Mack, because I want to see the future of the Colts running back position instead of, well, this is the guy, he might last a couple of years. You know what I'm saying? That seems like what we've gotten in the past from anybody that they've drafted. It just doesn't, you know, it doesn't ever seem to take off, or something happens to one of them and it doesn't ever pan out or whatever. But yeah, I want to see.
Can you imagine if we, you know, if we stumble upon, I mean, if somebody like Mack comes out and just lights the world on fire, and, you know, 3 years from now, we're not talking about Leonard Fournette. We're talking about, you know, Marlon Mack as this guy that, how did we miss on this guy? I don't think that's going to happen, but, I mean, how different is this offense? You have a guy like that who really breaks out. We haven't ever had, I mean, for as long as I can remember as a Colts fan, and I'm a relatively young Colts fan, you know, only 17 years under my belt, so I haven't experienced a ton of really good running back play, and it's been so long that I can't hardly remember what it looks like. But, you know, if you had something like that, man, wouldn't that be fun to watch if Luck didn't have to, if he could 50-50 run and pass and just let him, you know, sit behind a great running game? Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
That could be nice. Be wonderful. Huh? That could be. Man, Chris, thank you for joining me tonight here on the Colts Cast, man. It was great to talk to you. Welcome to Stampede Blue, of course. And is there anything that you wanted to plug that you've been doing or anything like that before we jump off of here?
Not exactly. I did do a position profile on the safety group, and you can check that out and ridicule me for all the things I've gotten wrong, guys. I appreciate your comments, good, bad, or otherwise, because I know that means you're reading and you're passionate about the Colts. And you know, I don't take anything too personally. I'm a pretty lighthearted guy, so I'm probably going to try to bring some of that to all of the stuff. And I'll argue with you in the comments if you like, if that's fun for you or whatever. But yeah, I'm glad to be doing it. And it doesn't get better than getting to write for the, you know, write about your favorite team and, you know, think about football all the time. So
yeah,
it's what kind better of, thing is there than that?
Kind of a cool thing, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So, hey, thanks for jumping on with me tonight. Make sure that you are going to Apple Podcasts and rating and reviewing the show. Follow me on Twitter at mdainley_NFL. Are you on Twitter, Chris?
I am at Chris Blystone. Good luck spelling the last name.
Blystone.
Yeah, just exactly like it sounds, but nobody spells it anyway. If you find somebody whose name is almost the same and you want to ridicule them about my, you know, my posts, then you can do that and they'll just be really confused.
There you go. Make sure that you guys are following everything at Stampede Blue. We've got a nice staff forming, and getting together, and everything's coming together nicely. There's a lot of good quality content up there as well, and a lot of stuff that's going to draw the conversation just the same. So thank you guys for everything that you're doing out there to share the show. Make sure that you guys are following Stampede Blue on Twitter as well. Guys, I'll talk to you all on Friday right here on the Colts Cast.